Morning, I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Wednesday, April 24th. On the agenda, there is printed a work session for four bills, House Bills 3135, 3136, 3137, 3138. We will not be hearing those this morning. If you are here for those bills, we will reschedule those for a later date. Some of you may be prepared to flee. I'm opening an informational meeting on tobacco taxes. We have several people who we have invited to come speak and provide testimony for us and be available to answer questions that the committee may have. This is a time for the committee to do a little bit deeper dive into topics that were raised during our public hearings a week ago. And for this one, we are focusing on vaping or related activities and products and delivery mechanisms. Our first person for invited testimony is Max Belke. Could you please come forward? Thank you.
Is this on? Is it
yes.
working?
Yes.
Well, good morning, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. Thank you for having me back here. It's great to be back out in Oregon, a little sunnier this time. As mentioned previously, my name is Max Belke. I'm the Director of State Public Policy for Juul Labs. And my previous life, I was the tax director at the National Conference of State Legislatures. So I spent a little bit of time with state tax. So today, I'd like to focus on tax enforcement and tax administration as it relates to vapor products, because I think it's essential, it's vital to be able to regulate and enforce any tax that you were to put out there. Because as a company like ours that is going to collect and remit the tax, you don't want to be in a situation where you out-regulate, overtax the responsible players in the industry and create an opportunity for increased smuggling or black market activity would actually undermine the purpose of any tax to actually reduce youth access. So I think that, keep in the back of mind as we go through this, that that any tax that's out there, you have a robust licensure regime, audits and compliance checks in order to make sure you enforce whatever you law you were to pass. So these points here, I'm going to skip through a lot of the points on the slides, unless one.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second. I haven't started a timer. We're not going to limit you like to 2 minutes like before.
Oh, okay.
So we do have a little bit of time if you'd like to take, 5 to 10 minutes. We'd still have time for committee questions.
Sure. Great. Well, I have more slides than that still. I came with more information than that. So, this slide here basically this sums up where my points were at the beginning, but this is where we are right now on states that have actually enacted taxes on vapor products. The states that have acted this year are the states of New Mexico, which passed a bifurcated tax, which were to tax closed pod systems based on 50 cents per pod and open based systems at 12.5% of wholesale. And New York actually, the legislature passed, the governor hasn't yet to sign, we expect him to pass a 20% retail sales tax. They believe that because they believe applying the tax at the point of sale will actually address problems with compliance and enforcement, New York has 56% of their cigarettes are estimated to be smuggled in the state that are sold there. So they're looking for efforts to actually address that. They have the highest cigarette tax in the country. They also have the highest rate of cigarette smuggling itself. So when it comes into estimating revenue, I think it's a vital important as this committee, the purpose of this committee to look at. This is a nascent industry. This is difficult. And I've had to actually project revenue. I mean, they rely on assumptions regarding the future growth of the product sales. If there's effective tax collection and enforcement, I believe that, right now the state of Washington in their fiscal note for the bill they're considering thinks that the first year they're only going to collect 50% of the tax that they impose on vaping products. But also in terms of there's a lack of historical data and the recent growth in the vapor product category, and there's a lot of traditional smokers that are switching to substitutes. So any revenue projection you have out there, I urge it with caution because it's very difficult. Not to mention that e-liquid can be readily manufactured by an individual, thus attacks can be easily avoided. They call them shaken vapes. You can mix it in at the store itself. So once again, in order to actually enforce this at the retail level, you have to have compliance checks and, you know, and for tax enforcement purposes. I just told you to caveat my revenue projections, and I'm doing that again here. These are revenue projections that we used Minnesota and North Carolina, the only two states that we have so far that have actually reported data on how much they've collected on their taxes. So Minnesota imposes a 95% wholesale tax. North Carolina has a 5 cents per milliliter tax. And, you know, so we took those analyses, applied it across the country, and assumed for population differences what this would be. But Minnesota believes there's a very high, I believe anecdotally they've told us 40% of their tax is not being collected. So take that into account as well. So, but we've been, to address this, is that the states have looked at, as you've seen with New York, because this product is not like traditional tobacco. After nicotine, the similarities in the products come to an end. This is a liquid solution that you can buy components online, you can buy them at the store, you can mix it in at any time. Whereas cigarettes themselves and tobacco is very regulated from where it's grown at the farm all the way through the line of production. Whereas when you have vaping products, that's not the case. So you also can get things online on wholesale. You can buy them online and just bypass the wholesale process and then sell them at your store or sell them somewhere else, which therefore negates the whole enforcement at the wholesale level if there's no way to actually do that, to actually address it at the retail. So similar to, so applying it at the point of sale and applying a separate and distinct receipt of information on the receipt of the tax will first show that the tax department that it's being collected, as well as give it more of a chain of custody from where that product came from all the way through the wholesale level back up to the manufacturer. Doing it this way, it does not discriminate against any type of products across the category. It doesn't encourage tax avoidance strategies, and it's easily verifiable by sellers on buying and taxing authorities. And I think the way to look at this from an analogy perspective is the way that marijuana is being taxed across the country. That the vapor products like marijuana are not ubiquitous. They're not even homogeneous across the product category. You have the flower, you have infused foods, you have liquids. So applying it to point of sale actually addresses those issues as well. It also enhances the state's ability to track this. Most states have seed to sale for marijuana all the way through to be able to see where that to address the legal black market marijuana out there. This also adds another reporting tool as well. So actually, I'm going to skip over. This was just the fact that a New York City comptroller's report, May of 2018, found that when Washington switched over their tax to retail gross receipts, it simplified tax enforcement. And that's actually what Vermont's advisory committee right now is recommending, is it's the simplest and the best, most streamlined rollout for the Department of Taxes to collect. This is just a slide about my company here, why I came to work here. This is the growth of us and then the drop in cigarette sales. But this is something that we're, the tax evasion avoidance and smuggling is something I think is especially important. We're seeing this more and more because activity undermines any health aspects. As I mentioned earlier, 56% of the cigarettes in New York State are smuggled because the tax is so high. And there's more money in cigarettes than there is in any other illegal drug. So it's with lower penalties. So it's something to keep in mind. And as the Pew noted earlier this year, a report from last year, they found that a high taxes incentivized smuggling nonetheless. But in terms of our company, these are just three straight slides of news headlines I pulled of counterfeit products that are out there. One of the most frustrating parts right now for working for my company is seeing products out there that are Juul products, Juuls, but they're not ours. We pulled our flavors out of the store shelves in November. If you have a mango pod, if you have anything else that you're buying at the store, it's nearly 100% chance it's illegally there. And we only have, all of our flavors are online. So when you see this, my brother brother-in-law is a vice principal and talks about how that those aren't the kids, the flavors kids like these days. They're berry, they're whatever they may be. And I'm like, yeah, well, they're using them and filling it in. So we're actually trying to, we're going to address that with other technology, hopefully later this year, to actually make sure that only our pods work in our devices because for that reason. But 30 counterfeits, this was last year. This was in the New York Post a few weeks ago, coming in from China. If you could tell the difference on there, you know, as well. And this was last week. They found 1,000 fake counterfeit jobs coming into Philadelphia.
Could you please back up to the previous slide? Oh, okay. Thank you.
It's rather frustrating for this to happen. So we've been working a lot. I was speaking with our head of product brand protection. He was at Apple for 10 years to come over, and it's really, wow, crazy, depressing actually, what the amount of counterfeits that are coming in primarily through internet platforms, through third-party marketplaces where they think these things are coming in, and there's a lot of money in them. You know, the counterfeits are very lucrative, and they're being sold all over the place. So we need to address that enforcement piece with the tax to make sure that you're actually making sure that the products that are out there are actually legal and should be there to begin with. So, you know, when it comes to addressing these things, I think detailed sales reports regarding where the sales came from to provide, you know, to track this, to ensure track compliance both for tax purposes, but also to make sure the chain of custody of where this came from. If it's just taxed at the wholesale level and you go in there and you go to buy a product, you go, okay, well, you assume the tax is included in the product price. Whereas it may never have been, it was completed, and there's less of a visibility of this. Is this tracking illegal? Is this a legal custody product that's out there? Or if it's something, if there's a retail tax that's applied there, there's more accountability through the entire chain. Finally, the last Louisiana Department of Health. I found this yesterday. I was upset. I was just saying earlier, I wish I'd found this a couple of months ago. They looked at they surveyed and asked the states that have taxed e-cigarettes for lessons that they could use to apply for compliance and enforcement. So I just pulled out a couple of areas I thought were interesting. That in the state of Minnesota, for example, that when you applied at the wholesale level, you are taxing the, you know, products that, you know, you're creating different types of disparities between the product class, you know, significant tax discrepancies for very similar products. And as Pennsylvania said, out-of-state companies are coming in online, they're not being able to enforce that as well, that they're coming in and subverting. And they're not reporting taxes that come in. And then Louisiana itself says, I'm going to quit read this, currently vapor and e-cigarette products are not entirely distributed through licensed wholesalers, and other products are. There is no tax stamp purchase in advance required to be affixed to the product itself, thus it's more challenging to monitor the distribution and tax collection efforts. Many products sold can contain additives which are added at the retail level with no supervision or control. Finally, any attempt to apply the existing tobacco distribution model to these new products will be met with the same resistance from wholesalers. They also found the Department of Revenue, the challenges, lack of staff, educating the staff and potential taxpayers, no requirement for vape retailers or vape shops to register with LDR, no requirement for vapor retailers or vape shops to provide a bond, and an inability to identify vape shops. So if you don't have a license, if you don't know who they are, you don't know if they're collecting tax or how to enforce it. I think that's vital to any regime that this state looks to impose on vapor products, because if you impose a tax without being able to enforce it, you're not going to address a problem. So with that, I thank you. I look forward to your questions.
Here's a question.
Okay.
We do have one. Representative Bush.
So is your main message to us that we should position this tax as a retail tax? Is that the main takeaway that you want us to hear?
I think it's, you know, if you want to enforce this properly, because of the heterogeneous nature of the product category, I think that there has to be enforcement level at point of sale at retail.
Okay. Yes, Representative Reschke.
Great. Could you give me an idea of the price of the Juul and then the consumables that you would purchase afterwards at the retail level and potentially what the knockoff prices are?
So I actually make it a hobby now to go to vape shops and buy knockoffs. Online, our pack of four pods are $16, but they're sold typically somewhere in the $18 to $20 range at retail.
Okay.
A knockoff, I think you could buy those for, I bought them for $12, mm-hmm. $11, $14. And actually, I've been told, there is research undergoing what's in those pods itself because we don't even know either.
And how about the just to clarify the actual Juul device itself? What does that retail for?
I believe it's $29.99 online.
Okay. And do you find follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Do you find knockoff of that device, or is it mostly in the consumables?
It's mostly in the consumables because that's where the money to be made for the counterfeits.
Okay.
Stick around a few minutes in case another question comes up.
I'll be here. Thank you.
Dr. Katrina Hedberg.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg. I'm the State Health Officer and State Epidemiologist with the Oregon Public Health Division. And I'm here to shift gears slightly. I'm going to address some of the health effects of e-cigarette products. So there's substantial scientific data that show that inhalant delivery systems, which are also called e-cigarettes, vape products, et cetera, they can cause harmful health effects in users themselves. So that's one point. These are not harmless products. The second point is that the industry really has been marketing these heavily to youth so that they can be addicted for a lifetime. And that is also an issue because many of these youth adults end up crossing over to combustible tobacco products as well. So as noted, almost all the electronic cigarettes contain nicotine. It's a highly addictive substance. It's known to be even more addictive than heroin. Very, very difficult for people to stop using nicotine products. Nicotine itself is a stimulant. It increases heart rate, blood pressure, that are known risk factors for cardiovascular disease, heart disease, stroke. It's also toxic in and of itself. High doses can produce agitation, confusions, convulsions. They pose a problem with poisoning. So oftentimes these cartridges, especially flavored, in the hands of young children when they're using these can get poisoned by nicotine with some of the symptoms I just mentioned. It's harmful to fetuses. So if a pregnant woman is using high doses of nicotine, that's a problem. And kids who are using these, their brains are still developing, and so it actually alters brain chemistry. Again, one of the reasons it's very hard if kids start using nicotine products for them to end up quitting using these products as adults. One of the problems is that these are very new on the market, and so we don't know a lot about the longer-term health effects, both of nicotine use and then of the various flavors that are included in these products. So there will, presumably over time, we'll have much more scientific data about it. But right now, we don't know all the long-term data. In addition, these products, of course, it's not just nicotine. There are a number of other substances that are included in these. Some of them are, and I mentioned flavors, but some of them are known to be carcinogenic and others. What we don't have is the long-term data to show what those health effects are going to be. But we do know that these substances or that the e-cigarettes, vape products do contain potentially harmful substances. Currently, cigarette use among youth has gone down, and that's very good news for those of us in public health. They're using fewer combustible cigarettes, but what's taken the place are these electronic cigarettes in youth. It has increased markedly for electronic cigarettes in general and products such as Juul. So our student wellness survey showed that currently 21% of Oregon 8th graders currently use e-cigarettes products, and we define that as having used these products at least once in the past month. It doesn't mean they're daily users, but again, nicotine and nicotine addiction, most people who have long-term nicotine addiction start when they're using these as teenagers. It's been heavily marketed to youth, as I mentioned, and flavors are a key component of that. Electronic cigarettes are known to come in more than 15,000 various flavors like Neon Dream, Melon Mango, etc. And the vast majority, over 90% of our high school students who are using these products are using the flavored products. They are not doing it, if you will, only for the nicotine. They're using it because these flavors are really prompting them to use that product. Certainly, some current combustible cigarette smokers, particularly adults, e-cigarettes may have helped them to quit. There's been a lot in the press about that, whether or not these folks can gradually taper down their nicotine amount. But that's not what these companies are trying to do. If they were a cessation devices, they would be trying to get FDA approval, and none of these products have received that approval. They'd also be sold in pharmacies, and they're clearly not. They're being sold with flavors and targeted to youth. No e-cigarette company has applied for an FDA approval for the device, nor are these covered cessation benefit. Many of the adults, again, from our survey, we know, aren't just using e-cigarettes. They're actually using both of the products. They may be using e-cigarettes as well as combustible product tobacco. And we know that tobacco continues to be the leading preventable cause of death in Oregon. So in summary, the health concerns that we have about these really are twofold. It's the nicotine in and of itself, that it is very, very highly addictive, that kids will end up becoming addicted to nicotine and will have a lifetime of addiction and potentially use combustible products, and that these are being directly targeted to youth so that they will end up being addicted. These companies are trying to sell product, and the way to do that is to have kids who are using these over a longer term. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Doctor, for coming. Can you describe for us the difference between nicotine and tobacco? Because some of these consumables, I think, have nicotine in them but don't contain tobacco. If that, I don't know if that's correct or not.
Yeah.
And then some of them contain both, and some of them, I don't know if any of them contain none. So I'm trying to understand the difference between those two chemicals. One's a plant, but yeah.
Attorney Nathanson, Representative Reschke, thank you for the question. It is a little complicated. So tobacco is a plant, and it contains a variety of chemicals. Nicotine, of course, is one of the chemicals that it contains. We're all aware also of tar and numerous other carcinogens. So if you extract nicotine, most of the nicotine that's on the market has been extracted from tobacco. So the FDA has actually deemed that these electronic cigarettes are tobacco products. However, electronic cigarette or a vape device is a device that you can put a liquid into. And so that's why you can potentially add flavors to it. You can add different amounts of nicotine. And certainly people are also using these types of devices as inhalant systems for THC or cannabidiol or whatever the cannabis-related chemicals. So when we talk about it, or what's being sold, they're really being sold primarily for that nicotine content, and many of these have very, very high levels of nicotine content. So again, to your question, mm-hmm. tobacco is the plant that has the chemicals, and combustible tobacco, again, you get sold with lower nicotine content or lower tar or whatever, but that's still the plant. Then people are inhaling or burning that, inhaling particulate matter. These e-delivery systems are still primarily with the nicotine aspect of it, but they do have a variety of other chemicals that are included in those delivery systems.
A follow-up. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And the reason I ask is because the discussion platform on today's agenda is tobacco taxes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so if these products don't, quote, contain tobacco but contain nicotine, I think we need to be clear on what we'll be taxing for the product classification of the taxes.
So again, Representative Nathanson and Representative Reschke, that's why I said the FDA is the one who has deemed that these are a type of tobacco product. But the delivery device itself, of course, if you just is a delivery device that various chemicals can be put into. But the primary purpose of them is related to nicotine delivery, which is considered a tobacco product.
Thank you.
From the purposes of FDA.
Oh, I had one more.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. You mentioned, and I've heard this before, that tobacco is the leading cause of preventable death in Oregon. Do you have numbers for that? that you could provide. You don't have to do it now, but if you could provide my office that, that'd be just for like the last 5 years would be super, or 10 years would be good.
Yeah, sure, Chair Nathanson and Representative Roeschke. Absolutely. The way that those data are, so. Yeah. We talk about premature death because, of course, sure. You know, mortality. I mean, at some point,
we're
people
all dying.
Die. Yes,
I got
exactly.
You.
So, what we're really looking at is premature death. And the primary premature death that's caused by using tobacco, of course, is dying prematurely from heart disease. Lung cancer is known, et cetera. Tobacco also contributes to a number of other health conditions, obviously, respiratory diseases like emphysema, chronic bronchitis, et cetera. There's a whole host. So, when we do these analyses, and this is something that's being done throughout the country. It's not just kind of Oregon that made it up, if you will. These are calculations. We can absolutely give you what data go into that. The Centers for Disease Control actually has a software program that they look at with the prevalence of smoking and these various conditions in the population to see how many deaths occur in each state that would be preventable or would be premature, if you will, related to tobacco products. So that's, we use a standard methodology to come up with that number.
Thank you.
Other questions? Yes, Representative Hernandez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know if there are other countries that are dealing with the same issue and what type of approaches they've taken, and if there's been any best practice on how to, one, regulate, two, tax, and then perhaps lower public health risks?
Yes, so Chair Nathanson, Representative Hernandez, thank you for that question. I'll have to get back to you. I don't know off the top of my head. What I do know is that most other countries, I heard the other day that Australia has a tobacco tax of, you know, that's $30 a pack or something. I mean, most other countries, these products are highly taxed. But that is a little bit different than your question, which is what about alternative either tobacco products or vaping products or e-cigarettes? So we will get back to you on that. But many countries do heavily tax tobacco and related products. But we will get back to you with the exact information.
Thank you. Let's let this be the last question for this witness. We have one more.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Hernandez asked about other countries. How about other states? How are other states grappling with this problem, or do we know?
Chair Nathanson and Representative Roeschke, we'll have to get back to you on that. Again, the previous speaker talked a little bit about this. I do know a lot of the numbers that we have in the data really come from both the Centers for Disease Control and the National Academy of the Sciences, who's been looking into e-cigarettes. But the very specific question about, so all the data, again, we don't have Oregon-specific data other than the number of kids who use and adults who use these products. We don't have data exactly on what the longer-term health effects. So I'm sorry. So the question is very specifically how other states have been dealing with vaping products.
Vaping taxes, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm a health expert. I'm not a tax expert, but we can look into how other states are dealing. I certainly, am aware that part of the reason that the FDA has deemed these tobacco products is so that they would be part of a regulatory framework that included tobacco products. But we can get more information to you on that.
Great. And I'll ask Legislative Revenue Office also to provide information for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to hear from Christina Bodemer.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christina Bodemer. I am the Oregon Government Relations Director for the American Heart Association. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. I do have a couple slides that we'll go through, and my submitted testimony is significantly longer than my comments here. what I wanted to start out is that given that this is the sixth day of testimony on this, we know that this is abundantly clear that there are some challenges around tobacco control, and particularly with e-cigarettes in the state of Oregon and across the nation. We don't have the same decades-long science on e-cigarettes that we do on traditional cigarettes, just because they're a newer product, but that there is enough evidence coming out to cause enough concern for us to take swift action in public policy to prevent youth use. And public advocates, public health advocates, are not the only ones concerned with the spike in usage. The FDA has taken steps to investigate different things regarding e-cigarettes and their marketing. And the U.S. Surgeon General actually took the steps just this last December, putting out an advisory for parents, teachers, and health professionals about the negative health consequences of e-cigarettes. There are a wide variety of electronic nicotine devices. This is a small sampling of some of the products that are on the market. As you can tell, some of them are clearly look like traditional cigarettes, but others, and a growing number of them, resemble everyday objects like pens, USB sticks, and markers. And I actually have, if I may submit for consideration, I have a Juul stick, just in case you've never seen one, of just how much it really does look like a USB drive. I'd be happy to pass it if anyone would like to touch it. In the 4 years since its launch, Juul has become the most rapidly growing type of e-cigarette, controlling 72% of the e-cigarette product market in the United States. This is particularly appealing for adolescents, for several reasons. As you can see, it has a very slim design shaped like a USB drive, making it incredibly easy to hide. I actually have a colleague who said that she wouldn't know that with her teenage daughter, that that was not a USB drive if she saw it in her backpack and know that there would be cause for concern. They come in different colors and flavors that appeal to kids. They charge in a personal laptop device. So there's actually an interesting ad where it's one of those spot what you missed. And there's two teenage girls sitting in a bedroom charging a Juul in their laptop computer, having a conversation just like regular teenage girls would about boys. And you miss, if you don't know what you're looking for, the transfer of this good between the two of them. There also is of.
I'm going to interrupt for yes. just a brief moment.
Yes.
You mentioned Juul, but there are other manufacturers, other devices, so can those also be charged that way?
I don't know how all of them are charged, to be perfectly honest. There are close to 400 devices on the market. So that's one of the concerns of there's a lot about these products that we don't know, and they're not very well regulated. Distinct challenge with Juul is it does not emit a very large puff of smoke, making it extra easy for students to be able to conceal this in bathrooms and even in classrooms when their teachers have turned their back. We've heard reports from teenagers, thank you, of having people Juul in their classrooms. But although I've talked a little bit about Juul, there are other e-cigarette products that cause equal concern. Determining what are truly nicotine-free is very difficult. Most of the time, there are some e-cigarettes that actually claim that they're 0% nicotine, and with testing, they've been found to contain nicotine. There's also great concern that in a recent survey, we found that when you ask teens what's in their e-cigarettes, 66% say just flavoring. They don't know what they're actually putting into their bodies. As was reported before, e-cigarettes are not an FDA-approved cessation device. There are many FDA cessation devices, including lozenges, patches, gum, and a couple pharmaceuticals, but no clinical studies on the safety and efficacy of e-cigarettes and their intended use have been submitted to the FDA. In addition, the FDA has not exercised their ability to approve any products as modified risk tobacco products to date, which would allow a certain category or a single product to market themselves as posing lower health risks. None of these have been approved. The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, which is a group of health experts that makes recommendations about preventative health, has reviewed the available data and concluded that the evidence is insufficient to recommend e-cigarettes for smoking cessation. We know that the long-term health effects, we just don't know them. But some of the short-term health effects, we know that these products contain fine particles that have varying amounts of toxic chemicals, which have been linked to heart disease, respiratory diseases, and cancer, which, of course, the American Heart Association is acutely concerned about. There are some short-term health impacts. The FDA has recently reported an uptick in seizures in youth e-cigarette users from regular usage instead of just the previously known effect of nicotine toxicity reported in cases of intentional or accidental swallowing of the e-liquid. There Also, yesterday, there was a new study that came out that said there was an uptick in bacterial and fungal toxins found in e-cigarette devices that are known to cause lung cancer. So the growing list of things we just don't know about this product is growing. So these are some of the more egregious samples of e-liquid flavors on the market. But I have a couple more examples of things. So we have got some of the Juul pods, blue raspberry and California cream, which I do understand have been taken off the market, but I purchased these 3 weeks ago at a Plaid Pantry in Wilsonville. So they're still out there. I also have a vial of e-liquid that is Skittles flavored, but because Skittles is a trademark, it's called Rainbow Drops. And if you open it up, it smells exactly like a jar of candy. And terrifyingly enough, when my 4.5-year-old saw my bag of goodies in the car, he asked me if it was candy. And I didn't know how to respond that this was just something I had to have on my person for my job. So a little bit about marketing. So there are very few restrictions around marketing for e-cigarettes. They've been incredibly effective with both traditional and new marketing techniques. So we see here an example of why quit, switch to blue, which plays into question if this is a cessation device. They're actually saying, why quit? And then the effect of marketing from, I think this was actually some of the images from the Juul launch party. They've been very effective in using Instagram and Facebook. They have now taken down both of their social media pages, but the damage has already been done. This was only since last November that they took these down. Other incentives that e-cigarette companies have been effective in getting these into the hands of youth, they've offered scholarships, they have influencers and celebrity endorsements, they sponsor music festivals, and then they also have these appealing flavors. So I'll kind of wrap up because I can tell there might be some questions for me. So the FDA has started their process to regulate these products, but this is very slow moving and there's been some false starts. Last year, Juul and several e-cigarette manufacturers were at the center of an FDA investigation. From this investigation, many of these companies were given 60 days to submit plans to curtail the epidemic rise in youth use. These plans were released just before a news broke of Juul partnering with big tobacco company Altria, which is the parent company of Philip Morris. And I've submitted for the record a letter from several U.S. senators, including both Oregon U.S. senators, that was written to the CEO of Juul with several questions around their marketing practices and how they intend to follow through on the promises they've made to curb the youth consumption. So I know I've focused a lot today on e-cigarettes, but I think that it's critical to make sure that I mention the importance of kind of the package that we're looking at with House Bill 2270 and increasing the price of all tobacco products. The way to really raising prices in tandem is the way to achieve the greatest substantive reductions in nicotine addiction for all Oregonians. And I did want to add one last thing. I know that there's lots of ways that people have looked at taxing these new products. Senator Taylor has actually had a work group, and several bills have been introduced in previous sessions. So there have been discussions in Oregon around the best way to tax this here. And wholesale was one of them that was leading the pack. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. And we have probably just 3 or 4 minutes because okay. We all have to be somewhere else. Yes, Representative Hernandez.
So I was looking online, and I can actually purchase this and get it mailed to me without paying any tax. Is the FDA or the federal government looking at ways to regulate that component? And how, if have you all thought about, you know, that component of regulation and taxation?
So as you might imagine, this is a very challenging thing to try to regulate. And as soon as we think we've got it, something in the nature changes and we have to address a new way of youth use. And online sales are definitely something that is of consideration. I know that there are many mechanisms. I think the challenges we're dealing with online sales, we're dealing with the USPS and federal governments and FedEx. There are several things that are actually in place for traditional cigarettes to try to kind of curb online sales and this mail of these kind of products, but we have a lot of work to do in terms of that for e-cigarettes as well.
Representative
Representative Breschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any data as far as underage male versus female use, or any data that suggests that these products are being used by youth to maintain weight control as a way of dieting?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Breschke, I don't have that data on me. I can definitely look in and see. I feel like the best way we might have some of that data would be around the Oregon Healthy Teen Survey, and I don't know that we ask the reason why they are using particular products to determine if it is for weight loss or not.
Thank you.
Can you go back a slide? Right there, thank you. I have to share with you, Madam Chair, if I had the authority, I would just move today to ban this.
Yeah, no problem.
I mean, it just, who are we fooling on this? And I know it's an emotional statement. I apologize for, but come on. I mean, we know who this is targeted to.
Thank you, Representative Smith.
I didn't get enough sleep last night. Sorry.
I had earlier had an idea that maybe we should, along those lines, say we can't use the colors pink and purple and use rhinestones and glitter. Any other questions?
I'm just cranky.
Thank you for being with us. That concludes our speakers list for invited testimony for this topic today. I'm closing the informational meeting. There's no other business on our agenda. We are adjourned.